Hello and welcome to another heaping hearty serving of owlbear soup. I'll be one of your cooks today. My name is Justin, and joining me today is my head shoe chef? Chef. Richard Molina Weber.
Wow. That was an intro. I love that. I like the idea that we are both the sous chefs for Chef Owlbear D, who really runs this show.
That is absolutely true. I believe we are his sous chefs. Although that's really hard to say. But we do know what is in the soup now. And remember when he told us that the secret ingredient was.
Wait.
Yeah. Hold on. Yeah. So yeah, you just grate it. You grate it a little bit and you toss it in the stew and it's great. So
can you say that one more time? Just for everybody at home. All right. Well, I don't know what we're gonna do about that.
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. Man. Amazing. Oh wow. Well, at least we know that there is one eyeball and the end of a bone at the very least in this congealing mass.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll get you started. Actually, don't let that get you started. It's not where you want to begin with a soup.
No. Well, welcome to another episode of Owlbear Soup. We are going to we have fantastic guests. Today we have Grandmaster Keith Baker.
Yes.
And
the Grandmaster of the Thunderdome.
And we also have the amazing volunteer wrangler, Dickie Adams. Dickie Adams is a fantastic photographer. He is also a fantastic game designer. But today we are going to be talking about conventions. And
And
this is going to be kind of a theme going forward. I'm looking forward to talking about more conventions as they come up. And I have some news about that today. But first. But first. Man. So we didn't have our Pathfinder 2 game this week.
I know.
So all my gaming has been done on Destiny.
Fair.
And Ghost of Tsushima. And so beyond that, Rich, what do you have? What do you have cooking?
I'm going fuzzy. I see it. It's better. You're awesome.
I'm on top of it.
You are cooking well. So this week has been a big week. It was the end of, besides the fact I didn't see our game was canceled until just a few minutes before it started. I was so excited. But this week has been the end of season 5 of the Academy of Adventures, right? Which is my game for kids, right? I run up to 10 sessions of one storyline for 5 weeks, then we drop it and we've got a new storyline going forward. And this was the end of the season of the Golden Games. And actually, I need your help. So,
ooh. My help? Or the audience's help?
And it could be anyone. here's the deal. You wrote for Organized Play, right? So, yeah. Organized Play, you have a narrative that's going to go forward. And sometimes single parties will have different things happen, but they have to get to the same place in the end, right? So in this one, this season, they went to the Olympics and this creature showed up and turned it into gladiatorial combat, right? Turned it into the Colosseum, which was fun. They're like doing all these fights, all sorts of things, but they also hate the person who put them in this position. And as the story continues, they find out that this person is auditioning basically to become the new god of conflict. Okay. We're kind of in the Forgotten Realms, so it's like stealing it from Cyrek a little bit. You know, I did this whole ascension thing, and that's what was happening. And so as in the end, they're battling this red dragon, like in one of these gladiatorial fights while this character is ascending, basically. And they can weaken them a lot, make them a weaker deity, and they get rewarded by Ilmater at the end of it for like persevering through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So digging in some Forgotten Realms deities in there was a lot of fun. but I had one character in one of the sessions. Everyone gets a reward. They all got a bonus feat that like gave him some extra spells and like a stat point. So it was a big deal from those deities. But one character decided to do something different. They climbed up the leg of the like new deity as they were ascending. Uh-huh. And I was like, so they get like, you know, beamed up and they're gone. Do you let go? And they said no. And in fact, as it continued, they continued like attacking this deity just as, I don't know, I didn't write that part. They were transported to distant planes, like fields of battle in, I don't know, Elysium. I don't know where we go. When Ilmater like did some cleanup work and the games were kind of fixed and they could continue the Olympics, and I had that character come back, but I don't know what to do with them. Are they like, what kind of a reward could I give them that is like on par with a bonus feat that gives you like two spells and a stat point, but reflects mm-hmm. like a journey through the planes, like punching a deity, like seeing other deities, maybe? Maybe it's too much for their mind to handle, but what could I do?
Yeah. No, this is going to be great to kind of think about, because there's a lot of options here. You don't want to overpower. You don't want to give them something too powerful. Where it's,
I mean,
like,
my kids are powerful.
Yeah.
I'm a monster.
You are a monster.
But you're right.
You know, the thing that I enjoy doing sometimes personally is give them the normal feat reward, like, you know, whatever. Their character gets maybe the occasional vision, right? And cool. then you just decide when they get that vision, so it's like it's coming from the deity, that type of stuff. That's where I would go, but you know, that does involve extra work for you, and
that's
in an organized place sense. I like what Dickie Adams said. He gets a participation medal, and once per day they get a bonus for intimidating performance or intimidation rolls. Yeah. You know, this is one of those cool things that in Ashes of Athas, when we did Ashes of Athas, we had some really cool kind of secret certs, right? And so you got these secret certs by doing certain things. Most of the time was having your character die. If your character died in this adventure, then you get to unlock the ability to play a special race. So something like a Minotaur, or or you get a metal weapon. So you could do something like that, and then you could even plan it out forward, and you could like come up with interesting secret certs that the kids can continue to collect as you go through.
Right.
Alpha Stream 1, Teos, in the chat says, Death Certs are one of the best things he made up.
I mean, yeah, that's a super smart way to do it. I love it. I keep looking at that with Pathfinder 2 as well. I'm making an NPC, and they have the, their long list of ancestries, but there are certain of them that they want to be more rare in the campaign world because they represent people not in like the core region, I guess, of the game. And I love those, like adding in some of the you know, your chance to play a monster. This time you can be like a shade. There we go. Oh, mm-hmm. I would kill to play a shade. okay, so I could do something like that, I think, some sort of secret cert idea. Yeah, I just want something that reflects the fact that they would not stop, like this rogue mm-hmm. that was like, no, you're not getting away from me. Seems like it's worth a little bit extra. So okay,
yeah, you know, I know, and you know, and it could be reflected to their tenacity, right? Like mm-hmm. You know, once per session when you fail a con save, you get to reroll it, right? You know, simple as that. And that's a little bit of extra boost, but it's not so overpowered that.
Yeah, right.
And based on the way this character was playing, like I imagine that they are a heavy con character already anyway.
So, I mean,
so it's a little bonus, right? You know, it's something that they should have been able to pass, but they didn't pass. So now they get this little bonus.
And, I like that.
I think that's the route I would take.
Okay, so I may rewrite that bonus feat so it's a little more specific, tailored to that character, but doing something similar, and then add a little boon like that on top of it. That sounds good. I wasn't going to make them the new, you know, they're not a deity now, but
no.
I want a little bit of that in there, little taste.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and you do things and you put a little note in there, like, you know, once you reach level 11, you get this, and once you reach level 20, you become a, you know, an avatar of the god, because, you know, sure, you're not gonna go that far. But
right, yeah, we're stopping at 7, so
yeah. The next boost happens at 8.
Oh, that's good. I'll write that in there. You know, whenever your character dies, they get to skip the petitioner line, go right to the front. Now they're super. Like,
yep, exactly.
You're a rogue astral diva. I don't know. I'm not so great on the afterlife of D&D, but
right, yeah, it gets a little we'll longer. Yeah. All right.
Cool. All right.
So, well, we solved that problem. I think it's time to go.
I'm feeling confident.
All right. Let's jump into our news.
All right.
I think I forgot how it was going to go. I think I said I was going to kick it off.
Yes. Take it away.
So first thing I kind of want to talk about, this looks pretty interesting to me. So on May 26th, Kobold Press is going to be releasing the Kobold Guide to Monsters. So this is monster creation rules and insights for tabletop RPGs. So this book contains rules and philosophy and around like creating monsters and how to design monsters based on mythology, literature, or even pulp culture. And, you know, talks about balance and how to reconfigure monsters so that they fit your genre, and yeah, all kinds of cool stuff like this. The thing that really stands out to me is the authors that they got to join in on this, which is Monty Cook, who's because of Planescape is one of my favorite authors, Wolfgang Bauer, who the man behind Kobold, Steve Winter, Celeste Konowich, and Crystal Fraser as well. So Steve Winter, is that Mistra? Is that Steve Winter?
Oh, shoot. I even just read some news about that setting. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. There is some news about it, but it's a little fuzzy. So we'll report on it when it gets a little bit closer, because I also looked into that as well.
Yeah. Celeste, we're going to talk about. Oh, fair enough. We'll talk about Celeste in just a little bit, actually.
Yeah. All right.
This is very cool. I love these. I was just looking for my copy of the Kobold Guide to Game Design, right? They're amazing books. I love the essays. Like, they come from all these different viewpoints of what they find important in these things. Like, it's incredible. If you are up for writing some monsters, this is going to be a book you're going to want.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. All right. Well, on the Celeste note, I'm really excited about a Kickstarter that is open right now. It's Venture Maidens, and I like this because it is a campaign guide based on a streaming world. We got a few of those, of course. We have our Critical Role book out there in the world, but this one is I'm very excited. Venture Maidens is entirely led by women, and Celeste is the writer of the whole darn book. I just want to support this. Like, absolutely. Not only is it a great stream and a lot of fun to watch, but this book sounds like a lot of fun getting to play with their heroic destiny system that they'll be adding, plus new subclasses, monster templates, magic items. I mean, it's a campaign guide. It's got tons of information that you're going to need to run your game in their world. And as usual, things are pretty cheap, honestly. If you are looking for that, the digital copy, the PDF, is just going to be $18 when it comes out. Prints up at 45, and of course the collector's version and all the rest. It's a Kickstarter, you know.
Yeah.
Dice, whatever add-ons you want, but it's just a cool thing and a cool way to support, I think, streaming actual plays. There we go. Yeah.
You know,
check it out.
And an interesting thing to kind of break up, because, you know, we are a network that does our own streaming actual plays. And I think it's important. And the philosophy around here is that, rising oceans lift ships, or what is it? Like, the more we all help each other out, the better it's going to be for everyone.
And Justin, so, I come to you for boat metaphors.
Huh?
I come to you for boat metaphors. I mean, yeah.
Oh man. Speaking of boat metaphors, this has nothing to do with one. So,
oh my god, it was just a rising tide sinks all ships because they're scary, but that's not how it goes.
Wait, is it lifts, a rising tide lifts. Sinks all ships? I thought it was a rising tide lifts all ships.
Lifts, yeah. but I'm scared of the ocean, you know?
What's a metaphor? I like the ocean. Okay, so anyway, here we go. Speaking of oceans, that has nothing to do with this. So con season, well, this normally would be the time of year where we'd be looking into which different conventions we're going to be going to. We're going to be, you know, Rich and I would be talking to our partners, figuring out which conventions they're going to. But this year, 2021, for the most part, we're still in that online era. What we see is we see PaizoCon online is going to be May 28th through 31st. That's the more of the international or US version of it. And then the PaizoCon Europe online will be August 19th through 22nd. And then, of course, we know about Gen Con and Gen Con online, which Paizo will be there as well from September 17th to 19th. Gen Con official does seem like it's going to be the first kind of gaming geek convention that I would consider going to, but even that, it's going to be too close for me. So this is interesting. Paizo posted they are looking for GMs for Gen Con. So if you're interested in any of those cons, definitely go swing over there and check that out. And it's fun to be talking about cons again, even if it is just online.
It is. There's a big part of me that misses running RPGs at conventions. Like, demoing games is so much fun and allows you to like share your favorite thing with people who might not know about it or need that intro in. Conventions has always been like one of the number one ways to do it. I mean, I certainly done it at gaming stores as well, but I love cons because you're coming in. What experience is going to have at this magical Gen Con? And you're going to sit down and play a game. It's going to be awesome.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, just kind of stick on the con thing. I'm going to jump over Rich and make him scramble because I'm going out of order. Gamma, so the Game Manufacturers Association convention, they have announced when their expo is going to be in 2022. So for those of you who can get in, it's going to be from March 14th to March 18th in Reno, Nevada. Actually, it's going to stay at the Peppermill Resort and Casino for another year. Well, that's pretty cool. I would love to go to Gamma sometime.
Me too. It's kind of like there's a couple of cons that feel like they are meant for the people, and there's a couple that feel like they're, you know, geared towards publishing, and they're going to have like the talks that I really want about game design and crunchy stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's what I'm all about. So I want to get to Gamma someday.
Yeah, I agree with Dickie Adams in the chat. Road trip to Gamma. Let's do this.
Run through LA. It's on the way, right?
Yeah, we'll swing through. We'll swing through LA in our Studebaker.
And, yeah, we'll do a whole Southwest tour. Take Route 66 all the way.
All the way.
Wait, perfect.
Sunset in the east. All right. Yeah.
So cool. Well. My next one is while we're still here in non-con season, there's a Humble Bundle up right now for new and classic comic books based on Dungeons & Dragons. Humble Bundle is really cool. It's, you pay a little bit of money, a bunch of it goes to charity, and you get a ton of stuff usually, stuff that is... what was I going to say? Slightly out of print sometimes brand new stuff. But this is great. I mean, the comics that they have here are from stories that I love. We've got, Dragonlance classics in here. We've got some Baldur's Gate. There's definitely the evil at Baldur's Gate with Minsk and Boo right on the cover.
Yeah.
Which that one is last year.
That was,
I'm not sure.
Was that last year? I think, well,
this year,
I think it was 2 years ago.
Okay.
I don't know for sure. Mm-hmm. I just remember I picked up that one. I was pretty excited.
Fair enough. I'm very excited because, of course, my favorite Dragonlance story, the first one I ever read, is The Legend of Huma, and that's here in comics form. If you are at the $18 mark, which at that point you're getting 10, 18, 23 comics. It's great. It's a good deal if comics are your thing and you want to experience stories from all over the campaign settings of D&D.
Yeah, and I'll be picking that up mostly because I've never picked up the Dragonlance comics, so I've never read those. My association with Dragonlance is so thin.
Oh, they were the first books I ever read. I mean, when I was still just like, oh, the Player's Handbook, that's cool. Dragonlance was first, so it's kind of got a soft spot for me.
Streams of Silver was first for me.
Okay. I mean, fair.
All right. Let's see. I have one more piece of news for us, and then I think okay. Richard has a. Has
I got one more.
The Ruby of Phoenix, or the Ruby Phoenix, sorry. Let me start that over. The Fists of Ruby Phoenix Player's Guide is now available on Paizo. So what this is this is some additional rules for the Ruby Phoenix tournament. So, you know, it talks about the history and talks about some of the big NPCs. It talks about adventuring in the Dragon Empires. There's some new interesting backgrounds for your characters as well. Mm-hmm. And it has in the author, I saw them post about this on Twitter. They wrote something for forming a fighting team. So this includes inspiring tables to help you randomly or deliberately choose your team's theme, motivations, strengths, weaknesses, quirks, and more. And that's the part I'm pretty interested in. And this is the player's guide for the Pathfinder Adventure Path 166. Which is Despair on Danger Island, which will be coming out, they say, around May 5th. So,
oh my gosh, this is so exciting. Back in Pathfinder 1, the Ruby Phoenix tournament was, I think, a level 11 module. Mm-hmm. So it was meant to take you from 11 to 12. And it was amazing, right? It was, you were an agent of the Pathfinder Society sent out to Tian Sha to participate in this tournament as one of the teams. And it was wild. It was filled with all of these incredible fights, you know, fighting on huge platforms, spinning blades. I mean, the whole deal that you would want out of classic movies. It was a ton of fun. Turning it into an AP like changes so many things. Like I believe that one of the intents of the AP is that you are from the region. You're not, you know, journeying from the West or something like that. That's not going to be part of this storyline necessarily. And I love that. I love that it create some fixes and still gives you the chance to compete in this fantastic tournament setting. I mean, I can't wait. Yeah. All levels? We had to come up with all the stuff about building your team. And okay, if you two have a signature move, then you get advantage on this. Like you get a +2 to hit or something. You know, all those sorts of things were fun to kind of build on our own as we made this a huge deal. An AP devoted to it. I can't wait.
yeah, it does look interesting, and maybe when we're done with our AP, we can wrangle our GM to run this one for us as well.
I mean, yeah.
All right, well then, I think that wraps it up for news. So let's.
I got one more.
Oh, you do? What?
This is a quick. We'll keep this one quick because we do have a lot to talk about our next section.
I almost totally skipped over this one. I'm super excited about this one too.
Yeah, for a long time now, there has been a quest, I think, to take some major video games and kind of turn them into RPGs. One of the ones that I know we're both familiar with is D&D Destiny, which is turning the Destiny franchise into a D&D setup. They have a Discord going. They have tons of documents at this point. I mean, that game is totally playable at this point and will feel relatively similar to D&D, but you're, you know, a space wizard fighting, you know, fire guns and stuff. It's great. Someone did something similar, and this is what I wanted to chat about real quick, is a game called Lumen by Spencer Campbell. It is available on Itch right now, and it is an attempt to basically take the Warframe franchise and turn it into an RPG. I'm really excited that this is out because Spencer initially created Frame as kind of like a fan-based project, and when he showed it to the Warframe community, they exploded. They were like, you can't, what? No, that's, you can't, you know, take their entire IP and turn it into your game. And I think there was a little bit of, whoa, it's fan content. No. And the whole thing just collapsed. And Spencer was like, I'm out. I'm done. I'm never going to deal with that again. And so he's come back and created Lumen, which is not connected, but still gives you these like action-packed power fantasy games. There's lots of like quick dice rolling. Combat is fast. People are supposed to feel powerful like you do in these kind of looter shooter games where you are expected to destroy everything. And the goal is to like get cool new loot. So this is a cool game style, you know?
Yeah, I'm excited to check out Lumen. And I'm a little disappointed in the Warframe community. I really enjoyed Warframe when I played it, but I guess I'll just stick with Destiny.
I mean, yeah. And if that sounds like something you're interested in, they're actually sponsoring a game jam for Lumen to come up with your own content based on the system, whether that's new classes and supplements or a brand new game, like, you know, off of the Lumen system. Submissions for that game jam end on June 11th, That's my birthday. That's why it's stuck in my mind. But I'm kind of excited about that, just to see what people can build out of this. Like, you know, last week this was hugely negative and I was super sad about it, and now it's like, you know, like a phoenix, it will rise. It's great.
Like rising tides bring new games,
tear boats apart.
DJ Regular has pointed out that there is a great article on Dicebreaker about this whole deal. Totally worth digging into that. In fact, I'll probably read that afterwards.
Read that article and then look at Lumen, just kind of see what came out of it. It's very cool. Yeah. Well, awesome. That's all the news I think we both have, right? So it's time.
Let's dig in. So let's talk a little bit about this new June 11th, everybody.
It is.
Yeah. So let's talk about draconic options. More and more, I feel like we're getting closer and closer to a dragon book of some sort. And and here we have some what they're calling the draconic races. So in this guide, this is clearly, yes, Alpha Stream is correct. Draco Jammer clearly has been you've heard it here first. Draco Jammer. Confirmed.
We scooped it.
Scooped.
I want there to be a huge, like, across the screen scoop.
Scoop.
You know.
All right. I'll get that set up for a future scoop.
Okay. Good.
So as always, this is playtest material, and it's free to download on Wizards. This often will show up in the D&D Beyond app as well.
Right.
So and, all the opportunity to just play around with this.
Yeah, this is monthly. I mean, if you don't know about Unearthed Arcana, these have been coming out for quite some time, and these options you'll likely see in a future book. So if you're not keeping track, check them out. They're up on D&D Beyond less than a week after they come out on the site.
Yeah.
By my experience, at least.
Yeah. And this is something that we'll probably touch on every month just because we really enjoy it. And So anyway. The draconic options, playtest material. These are draconic races. These are a few different variations on Dragonborn and Kobold, in fact, because Kobold became a draconic race, I believe, in the third edition, right? Because
so,
in second
yeah.
edition, they were more like little dog-like animals. But here we are. Let's go ahead and look at our first one, which is the chromatic dragon. So this is going to be someone your vibrant colors, your black, your blue, your green, your white. Those particular dragonborn, so your scales are going to be like that, and you have a chromatic ancestry, so you get to choose, like, and that'll help direct what kind of damage type you have. So if you take black, you'll have acid damage type. If you take blue, it'll be lightning, green, poison, so on and so forth. So the first ability, let's talk about this real quick, is the breath weapon. So you create a 30-foot line that each creature must make a dex save equal to 8 plus your con modifier plus proficiency bonus, or take 2d8 damage. This trait can be used equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all uses when you finish a long rest. So one thing that I've really been enjoying in some of these new races and these new character options is that your proficiency bonus is for more than just your proficiencies.
I agree.
So standing out right for me is you can use this trait a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus. I think that's perfect. That's beautiful. Yeah. I really enjoy that. 2d8, 5 foot.
The version that exists in the player's handbook right now. Yeah. Sorry, keep going.
Oh yeah, no, I was going to say, you know, and I like that this makes you, when you take the chromatic, you get the 30-foot, 5-foot wide line. And I don't think there's enough line attacks in 5th edition, so it's nice to get another one of those in there.
Right, there's no variance in it, which is interesting. There's no, you know, the lines versus cones, although they're a little bit differently broken up in the player's handbook. So I kind of like breaking them up like this. If you are a chromatic dragonborn, you will have a line instead, period. A line of cold. And they did up the damage as well from 2d6 to 2d8. It will still go up. So the proficiency bonus is kind of the biggest deal, getting more. And like you said, that mechanic's awesome. That should keep going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, and then starting at third level, we get the chromatic warding, so that you can protect yourself from the energy type associated to your ancestry for 10 minutes. So you become immune to that damage type. And you can't do it again until you finish a long rest.
Right. There is nothing more sad than when you have a resistance. Oh, yeah? Yeah. That's what I was going to say. It's sad when you have fire resistance and then you still drop to fire damage.
Yeah.
All of my kids, whenever they play Dragonborn, they feel like they are immune to it because it's easier. It makes more sense to them, I think, than just half damage. So I like that you can do it. Like, add that option on here.
Okay. Yeah. For me, it seems powerful, but then it's so situational. So I think...
Right.
I think it's a good power. I could see them adjusting this from 10 minutes to 1 minute. I think 1 minute would be a better 10 minutes. 10 minutes means you're potentially diving through lava, but maybe there's no other way to dive through to lava. So you kind of build your adventure around this particular ability. Like if you have this dragonborn, so I've talked myself into it. I like it.
Right. It's not bad, I think. And there we get our chromatic dragons, right? That's traditionally the evil of the dragons. And then we move on to the metallic ones. And I'm kind of interested in how these differentiate themselves from the chromatic versions.
Yeah. So let's dig into that. So we have brass, bronze, copper, gold, and silver. Chromatic dragons, right? So where the changes begin to kick in is going to be the breath weapons. So each one is a 15-foot cone. The same DC... same damage increases. You have damage resistance, you do have damage resistance in the other one as well. I just missed it. Similar, but instead now you have the cone.
Right, close range, but more targets nearby. Mm-hmm. Sure, that's good.
Yeah, I like that. And then at third level, instead of gaining immunity, you gain a second breath weapon. So when you take the attack action, you can replace one of your attacks with an exhalation of magical gas in a 15-foot cone. That same spell DC or save DC. But then each creature in the aura must take a strength saving throw or be pushed 20 feet and knocked prone. Or each creature in the area must succeed on a con save or become incapacitated until the end of your next turn. I think both of those options are pretty great.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I like that it does reflect, how dragons work in fifth edition at the very least, right? I believe that the chromatic dragons do more damage over metallic ones have other options that they can do. So I like that they call that out here. Yeah. I think brass dragons can put people to sleep, so I like the incapacitation here.
Yeah. And then the last option, of course, is the dragonborn is the gem dragon. So let's go ahead and talk about the different seeds. So this is amethyst, crystal, emerald, sapphire, and topaz. Interesting that they're bringing up gem dragons. We can talk about that later. Once again, it's a 15-foot cone, dexterity saving throw, con, same deal. Was the other one dexterity saving throw?
I think they all are.
Yeah, right? I think so. No, I meant the special one from the special breath weapon. It's DC. It says it must succeed strength or con. That's what I was getting confused on. So
gotcha.
Anyway, so that's damage based on the kind of gem dragon you are. You have resistance that type, which means there's a way to get resistance to force and psychic now. And then, of course, there's the psionic mind, which I like that this one's different, a little bit different too, right? You can communicate with people within 30 feet of you, I think is good. You must be able to understand languages. And then at third level, you get flight. And this is why I think the other one that was from 10 minutes will probably get dropped down to 1 minute, because this is you summon gems that turn into wings or something, and you fly for a minute. I think it's good.
I agree.
But a minute, I think that's good. Right?
Yeah. Right. So maybe not 10. So let's see. Maybe you can correct me. What I recall from Gem Dragonborn or Gem Dragons is that they came up during the psionic era, right? I feel like chromatic dragons were generally more wizardly. Metallic dragons more cleric, well, paladin, somewhere in there, and gem dragons arose in the psionic.
That's kind of how I remember it as well.
Okay,
yeah,
And I thought they spit lozenges that exploded out in clouds. I can't remember exactly.
That's what I remember about their breath weapon, right?
So I'm sad that's not in here. I do really like the way they've got these set up. Just by in a mechanical sense, I love that this is no longer an action to use your breath weapon. It's just now part of an attack action. It takes an attack. If you are the barbarian and you rush in and you cleave something and then you want to blast everyone, you can do that now. And yeah. I love that as an option. That's a good change.
That is solid. Yeah. So far, I think I like the Dragonborn changes. I'm into it. I hope a lot of the races and species and ancestries get a revamp. One of them that I always thought needed a revamp is the kobold.
Yeah. Right. Kobolds, super interesting. I do love like getting into the draconic ideas of kobolds, like these little creatures that are just waiting for their inner dragon to like burst out and then they'll start flying. I always try and dig into that as much as I can.
All right. So kobolds, they get dark vision, so they can see 60 feet. They get draconic, and you notice that they don't have the weakness anymore. They draconic legacy. So you have advantage on saving throws to avoid or end a frightened condition. Perfect for a kobold, right? You know one cantrip of your choice from the sorcerer spell list. Intelligence, wisdom, or charisma is that casting ability. Fantastic. You make an unarmed strike with your tail, and you, if you hit with it, it deals 1d6 plus strength modifier, bludgeoning damage. And I think that's great, too. I like that. That's not one I would have considered normally, is thinking about a tail attack. But I love natural weapons. I love tail attacks.
Whereas you know me, I don't. So the option to not take that is great for me.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, like, so if I were going to choose one, I probably wouldn't choose that. I would actually, yeah, it depends on the build, right? Maybe it I does. Would choose it. If I was a monk, that'd be sweet.
I mean, that's fair. Because you can't finesse it. It's a strength only. This would be tough. I mean, depending on the character, just not being frightened would be awesome if I was playing some kind of big melee build. But I do love a good cantrip. So
Yeah. We were discussing cantrips as we were getting warmed up. What cantrip would you go for?
Too many good ones.
So this is the interesting one is Draconic Roar. So as a bonus action, you let out your Draconic Roar and enemies within 10 feet, it targets enemies within 10 feet of you. And until your end of your next turn, your allies have advantage on attack rolls against any of those enemies who could hear the roar. I like this, but I don't know that I would call it a roar. That doesn't seem to fit. Like I would like Draconic Distraction or something like that, right? Where you do something, and it could be anything. Like it could be your blood curdling scream. It could be your draconic poetry, because you know their poetry is much like Data's poetry. It's it's accurate, and you know, you could do something like that, and I think it would be better to be a distraction. But the roar itself is, I think it fits for people on the trail to dragons, but face it, your kobold's never going to be a dragon.
I mean, yeah, this is really interesting. I feel like this is a version of Pack Tactics, but for players, which I think is cool. Yeah. But, you know, when I look at like the Leonin and their daunting roar, like, you know, massive, powerful creatures and their roar makes someone terrified or frightened, which I like thematically as a roar that like gets your party active and involved in fighting and gives them all advantage. I'd retheme that myself, I think. But I do like this idea of kobold poetry. Because it feels totally a support option. It's a great support option.
Cool. And then on this guide, you know, they don't do this very often, but there are a few extra feats. There is a Gift of the Chromatic Dragon, so as a bonus action, you can imbue a weapon with acid, cold, fire, lightning, poison. And then whenever you take that kind of damage, you can use your reaction to give yourself resistance to that instance of the damage. Pretty sweet. I think that's pretty imbalanced. And then to kind of like line up with what you were saying before, Gift of the Metallic Dragon, you learn the Cure Wounds spell. And you cast that spell without expending a spell slot. Once you cast it this way, you can't do it until you finish a long rest. So, you know, that kind of leans into that. And you can also manifest wings that can shield you and others from attacks. So that's very in line with the paladin and that type of stuff.
Protective wings is such a cool idea. So I'm very happy to see that option here.
Yeah. And then we're not going to get into spells. Spells are going to be a little too nitty-gritty, but let's talk about Gift of Gem Dragon real quick. This one, you increase your intelligence, wisdom, or charisma by one. I like feats that have a stat boost. And then on top of that, you when you take damage from a creature that is within 10 feet of you, you can use your telekinetic energy deal damage back. So it's like a psychic protection, and you push people away.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, that's a ton of fun.
And we aren't going to look at the spells, but I'm interested in how many of them have dragons' names in the beginning. I mean, there's going to be some named dragons in this book that is certainly coming out. I mean, come on, look at this. I'm excited.
Draco Jammer. Yeah, I'm super excited for Draco Jammer. Yeah. And speaking of epic dragons, there is no setting more epic filled with dragons than Draco Jammer. But beyond that, I believe it's time to head over to our first guest. Are you ready, Rich?
I am ready. Although, real quick, just if you are playing the Unearthed Arcana and talk about the options, you can drop into the Saving Throw Discord, into the Owlbear Soup channel, and tell us all about it, because I want to know how these draconic options go for you.
All right. Without further ado.
Gasp. There it is. I am joined here on Owlbear Soup by the Grandmaster of the Thunderdome, the one and only Keith Baker. Keith, how are you? Welcome. Oh, you're still muted.
Technology! I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Wow. Let's see. I was just going to dive into you added technology to D&D, so
it's true. I do have to just jump in on the kobolds for just a moment to say part of it is I completely agree with your point. I think the ability is good for kobolds, but I didn't actually even read it closely, and I didn't even realize that the roar was a granting advantage tactic-y thing. I just assumed it was frightening people, because that's roar sounds like.
Right. Yeah.
So I've got to agree with you. I think the ability is great. I love we're coordinating, we're working together, we're a team, but I would not call that a roar.
Right. So. I think the goblins have a similar ability, right? Or is it the old kobold who could cower?
Cower. Anyhow, I don't want to get buried in that. I just want to throw that on because you drew my attention to it.
Yeah. Well, I am so excited to have you here because, you have been, first of all, one of my favorite authors for quite a while. Creating Eberron in, when did it go up? 90?
Oh, no, no,
what
no.
Year?
No.
Was it 2000?
2004. 2003.
Really?
2004. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, as soon as it came out, our third ed campaign swapped, so it feels like a big part of my play history. So
excellent.
And you would of course have never stopped the Eberron train. It continues to run.
Well, it's a lightning rail, it's magic.
Right.
It never runs out.
Can't stop, which is great. Recently put out on the DM's Guild, Exploring Eberron, which is still the best seller on the sites.
it gets knocked off for a couple days now and then, but then it usually creeps back up there. So, which is crazy to me. Like, I'm very glad people are buying it and enjoying it, but I mean, it's been 8 months or something now.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty amazing run.
I mean, I just think it's an excellent indicator that Eberron is one of those campaign settings that the people want, you know?
So, I want it.
Very cool. Well, that makes sense.
And of course, I'm working on my next book, Frontiers of Eberron, which you're effectively playtesting right now.
That's true. That is true. And it is fun. I don't know how much you want to talk about it. I would love to, of course.
I'm happy to talk about it. I mean, basically, what I'm doing right now is this all started towards the end of last year, where I was actually just talking with Wayne Chang, who's the producer for KB Presents, the little group that we made Exploring Eberron, and we're doing other things, and we're sort of, what do we do next? And we started working on a little adventure set on, what we call the frontier. Basically, over the last couple of years, I've run a number of campaigns out in Kabara on the east side of Eberron with this sort of, you're out on a little mining town in the end of nowhere with a little bit of a sort of Western flavor. And basically, in coming up with this idea, we said, well, people like that. What if we took that and we switched it over so it's actually in the West? in the frontier between Breland and Droam. Droam is one of my favorite places in Eberron. It's the nation of monsters. And it is this sort of open frontier. Breland doesn't actually accept Droam as a nation. So you don't really have this firm border. And basically, as I said, we started doing it as an adventure. And I just basically said, I love this area so much that I love to just do it as a sort of mini setting within the setting. That this is just... sort of like basically a campaign guide for running these little sort of Western flavored adventures in Eberron. And so the book coming out is called Frontiers of Eberron, and it's essentially this sort of region that is the western edge of Breland, the eastern edge of Droam, and you've got a little bit of the Eldine Reaches on the top. And it's just fun because it is an area where sort of no one really has a strong claim, where basically you're interacting with all the traditional sort of monsters as your neighbors instead of necessarily as your enemies, where the dragon-marked houses are moving in. And one of the things is that people have sort of brought up the fact, and I agree, that Qabara has a little more sort of classic colonialism. It is human settlers coming in and sort of taking the land, essentially.
Right.
Whereas in the Breland Droam, it's completely different. It is Droam is this active growing power. Like, it's not humans coming into land that they think is undiscovered. It's about the balance of power between this sort of growing nation of monsters and between this old sort of fogey nation, you know, of Breland that that isn't taking the monster seriously as it should be. So in part trying that out, you know, to explore that, I also started running a campaign on my Patreon. So I have a Patreon, Keith Baker, that supports the articles I write on my website. And to do something sort of a little unique for the patrons, if you back at what's called the threshold level, I try to every month run an adventure set in Threshold, which is this little Braelish city on the very edge of Droam. And I basically go through a little, I can't randomly select people because the rules of Patreon, but I can do little contests. So I do kind of, last one was like, tell me your character's favorite beverage. You know, the ones before that, most of them are, we have this cast of 10 characters and most of them were like, describe a connection between two of these characters and you end up playing one of them. But basically the characters are consistent. The story evolves, but the players change out each time. So anybody could have a chance to play. And so meanwhile, I then also am running an iteration of that same campaign at home here with you and a number of other friends, in part sort of for me to try out things before I bring them on the patrons. And so I've been having a lot of fun with that.
I really like the idea of having this core set of characters in this town, because I know whenever I read a campaign setting, it's always like so much good information. And now how do I start? Like, where's my starting point? And I love how, you know, fleshed out Threshold is now as this staging ground, right? You can start your story here. Here's the people around. Here are these 10, you know, major characters, the ones that are being played in your Patreon game. And they're, you know, sprinkled throughout the guide. They're in multiple places. You can really see the connections that you're building in this world. And it would make it so easy to drop in as a DM, you know, and get ready and be like, here's the place we're going to start. You can read this chapter to find out so much information and have these characters like immerse yourself as much as you want to, which is just, it's so good. It's kind of like how I would like to approach starting a campaign. I can just never find that book.
Well, and it's fun for me because we basically, I wanted to find a way for all my patrons to feel involved, even if they don't end up, because I have a couple hundred patrons, you know, they're not all going to end up being able to be at, in a session. But basically those 10 characters, we actually went through a process over a course of months of basically a series of polls that helped sort of define the basic ideas. Like, I started saying, okay, we're going to have the muscle, and we could have the sheriff, we could have the blacksmith, we could have the marshal, or we could have the bounty hunter. pick two of those and, you know, describe them in a little more than that. And then once they pick two, I'm like, okay, we've got the Smith and the Marshall. Now let's talk about the Smith. She's a shifter. Is she a barbarian? Is she a fighter? You know, is she a battlemaster fighter? You know, sort of went through these processes. So we have these 10 characters at the end of the day that basically, you know, all the people who have been in the patron, like, no. Like, you know, again, even if you do or don't play them, we've sort of built them together. Mm-hmm. And it's the same kind of process. Essentially, it's trying to do a session zero of right. This is what I would do in a session zero. And what I did with my Kabara campaigns was to sit down with the players and basically say, like, tell me something about this town. Tell me something, you know, you've seen it in mm-hmm. Frontiers of Eberron, the book I'm working on. Part of the point is I do have a chapter that is a deeper dive on Threshold. And one of the things I'm doing is it talks about all the businesses, but I've also thrown in every sort of business or major character has a list of like possible connections. Like right. How could you have a connection to the general store? How could you have a connection to the tavern? And I like that sort of idea of, you know, as a player, I could just flip through and say, ooh, I like that one. That's me. You know, like it's sort right. of an extension of background and mm-hmm. saying, let's not just think about my general background as a soldier, but let's think of, I want to be specifically connected in a meaningful way to two or three things in this town.
Yeah. Which is very empowering as a player as well. You've got those connections to kind of work off and build on with your characters, which I love.
And this is the point of, you don't have to play the campaign this way. Like this campaign book, the whole idea of it is you can just use it as, we're going to pass through this region and here's a bunch of interesting places to stop in mm-hmm. on the way. You don't yeah. have to play a campaign here. But if you do, part of what I like about it, as I did with my Kabara, is I like having a campaign, especially when you're starting at low level, where you actually have an investment in a place. Right. Where, and this is right. the idea of Threshold. This Threshold is a small town that is growing right on the edge of Droam and Braylon, which is to say in a very precarious position. The Dragonmark houses are taking a bigger interest. Things are changing. Mm-hmm. There could be cults hidden in town. And that the idea is, I want that from adventure to venture. You may be going off right. and investigating weird stuff under the mountains. You may be going off and fighting bandits in the north, but you're coming back to Threshold. And I like that feeling, like you have a connection to or investment in the town.
Absolutely. And it can grow and change.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I'm really excited for that book to come out. And so that everybody can start playing the setting, this cool, like, it feels Frontier, which I like in the ways that I want it to feel like a Frontier, you know, like not colonial, but yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
You almost got half the town blown up last time too.
We did. So we did. Yeah. Except I cast a spell. Everybody.
it is true that we're using Frontier here more in the sense actually of border than in
right, yes.
some of the more colonial aspects of Frontier.
Mm-hmm. Which I like a lot. So, well, one of the things I wanted to ask you about specifically is, as we've been playing, I mean, we've played a couple different games in the past. You do a thing very often, which I love, and it creates this collaborative world-building experience at the gaming mm-hmm. table. Mm-hmm. In this last one, there was a moment, I think right when that battle started, we were in a, you know, in the bar, in the Crown, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. And it was, all right, everyone, you know, there's, or in the festival, everyone described one,
festival
of the,
in the square,
one of the
yeah.
people, that's right, who is serving something here at the festival, the Sandfruit Festival.
Yeah, the Sandfruit Festival.
You know, what's their specialty? What do they make? Who are they? You know, and suddenly from nothing, from the events that there is a festival going on, now there's like five characters. How do you decide? I mean, how do you implement that? How can people watching right now, like, do you have recommendations for how you do that? I mean, it seems so natural for you, but it's hard to do.
Well, I'll say just interesting point is, this is something we also specifically do in Phoenix Dawn Command, a role-playing game, is we call out that sort of thing. And it's essentially the point of offering the players a chance to invest in cosmetic details that usually aren't game-changing, but right. they're, I am asking you for hooks. I am saying, tell me something interesting. So one of the simplest sort of manifestations of this that I'd like to call out is when I have people being attacked by a mob of zombies, Like there's what are called the Chanters in Phoenix. I will immediately say, okay, everybody, these are villagers. Like this is a village on the edge of the frontier before they were zombies. Tell me about one of the zombies who catches your eye. And the and I'll say a couple. I'll say like there's a guy who's clearly a bard who's got like a smashed lute over his shoulder. There's a butcher who's missing one of his arms but is still carrying a butcher cleaver. Now you tell me about someone. So I'm helping them, like I'm giving the idea, but then the point is what I want to know is like when you think of a mob of zombies, do you think of like, you know, the child dragging the bloody teddy bear? Do you think of the, you know, the old, you know, what is it that grabs you? Because as soon as you think about that, it's no longer just a random monster or a random bunch of numbers. It's now you see that scene. It's our story.
Right.
And it doesn't change anything, but it also means now if you say the child with the bloody teddy bear, then as I'm describing it, when I say the zombie grabs you and hits you for 3 points of damage, I get to say, oh, that child hisses and moves faster than you would have thought, and she beats you with a teddy bear. And again, it's something I would have never thought of, but now it's our story and it matters.
Right.
Likewise, in that sort of bar scenario, and I'll shut up because I know you don't have a lot of time, but in that bar scenario, that is the point of whether it's in the bar and there's a patron, whether it's at the festival and tell me about the people who were in charge. Once you start talking about them, you are invested in them and they suddenly become people I can use and essentially add tension in ways.
Right.
I had a game I ran a while ago where there was just this homeless guy named Newsy. They were in a bad part of Sharn. And I just said, everybody knows Newsy. He has old newspapers that he's always shouting the news as if it's new news, even though it's really not. Tell me about a story, you know, an interaction you've had with him. And people are like, oh, I sleep with him in the homeless shelter because my character's a homeless wizard. Or, you know, oh, I'm a barbarian. I don't realize the stories are old and I'm fascinated. You know, everyone gives a story. And then when Newsy gets captured by the cult and is like in danger of stuff, people care.
Right.
And so that's all I'm saying is it ultimately comes down to a sort of show don't tell type of thing. What this is saying is ask, don't tell. It's saying where there is a possibility, give players the chance to add some details, and then you don't have to use them all. You know, it's not like this is an obligation. If you say there's a character who's a stegosaurus and something or other, I can just be like, yeah, he is. He's over there. He doesn't do anything in the rest of the adventure. Right. But it is that chance for you to throw things out that I might be like, perfect. Oh, I can totally use, you know, the wise old Sam Fruit wizard.
Exactly.
You know, in some way.
Yeah, and you get to do it in the moments. As a DM, you are calling for the information when you kind of want it so you can adapt it a little bit easier rather than like a huge backstory or like a, you know, 50-question questionnaire before the campaign starts. It's kind of, it's very active.
And the last thing I'll say is also just throwing that out is another place I really like using it in Phoenix is when you're trying to set a scene as something scary. And basically, I'm going to say we're going into the abandoned temple. There is a layer of slime on the floor. You hear things dripping. The statue is cracked. But tell me something that you find really creepy. And part of the point is because I don't know what you find really creepy. I can't sort of do that.
Right.
But you do know what you find creepy. And, you know, you throw out the detail. I'll see what I can do with that and go with it. But at the very least, I've now got you thinking about what is a scary temple? What would I find creepy about it? And so I love, as I said, I'm always looking for opportunities to draw the players in those small ways.
Fantastic. Well, I know you have to get going. This advice has been fantastic. I really hope people are able to kind of add these collaborations to their adventures because they have been a great experience for me. And I think it's kind of helped me in my not just like playing, DMing, writing, all sorts of the ways. So thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Thanks
for having me on and thanks for playing in my game.
How soon is Frag coming out? Because we want to have you back so that you can also come back and do our part two or collaborative adventure building the future.
It is hard to say because it is one of these things. Like just the other day, I realized something that's probably going to add another 10,000 words, you know, to the book. I'm hoping end of July, which is when Exploring Eberron came out last year, end of July, early August. But I can certainly pop in before then and, you know, let you know how it's going or if I've killed all your characters in our game.
Oh, we'll definitely talk about that if that happens. It's almost happened a few times. All right. Well, it's been great having you. Everybody can track you down, of course, at keith-baker.net and on Twitter at hellcowkeith.
Keith-baker.com.
.com, I'm sorry.
Whew. And or togetherstudios.com is actually, we're going to be shifting over. That's probably the best place. So togetherstudios.com or hellcowkeith. So yeah. Bye, everyone.
Great. Have a great day.
Me, there we go. Ha 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 ha. I fixed it. I sometimes forget to unmute my own mic while I'm in the background fiddling with things, but I am here with my good friend, Dickie Adams. Dickie Adams is a fantastic game designer as well as a fantastic photographer. You can check out his photography at dickieadams.com. But what I specifically brought him here to talk about is convention season and conventions. What I know Dickie most from is chatting about, or, you know, hanging out backstage at conventions and, you know, talking the business of being volunteers. I find being a volunteer at these kinds of conventions a great way to get to know some really cool people, as well as get some behind the scenes looks at how cons run. And yeah, Dickie, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Is this like the inaugural Owlbear Soup convention online? There's like four of us here.
Yeah, that's the, this is our symposium. This is our panels, all of right. them.
Everybody's volunteer, nobody's getting paid. In fact, you have to pay to be the volunteer here.
Yeah. I think I went to a con once where I ended up paying and being a volunteer, and it was good. I was supporting the con, but at the same time I was like, man, I could have been doing this for free and I would have had more pizza money.
I went to the first MineCon and was a paying person with a friend of mine. And because we were just like, this would be super fun to do. And we got there and a fellow former enforcer reached out and said, hey, would you be willing to help? Mm-hmm. And of course, my personality is yes. And that was the way Absolutely. We go.
Right. And you brought up an interesting word that I just kind of want to bring up is enforcer. Yeah. I'm an enforcer. You're an enforcer. These are the volunteers for the Penny Arcade Expos, are the enforcers. Yeah. You know, of course, we're not speaking specifically about Penny Arcade, but we have plenty of experience going to those cons as well as other cons. So yeah. You know, so you mentioned MineCon, but how did you get into volunteering? What made you decide to instead of going to these cons to volunteer and have a great time, you decided to go to these conventions and work your butt off and have many late nights?
I don't think that I would not know that I would have thought of being a volunteer. Now I would recommend it to people.
Yeah.
The reason for it is because my circle of friends at the time, way back at the very first PAX, I didn't have a group of friends that would have gone to the con with me that were saying, hey, let's go do this group thing together. So it was just myself who had to find a way to participate mm-hmm. in a way that I could make it all the logistics work out. But then I knew that I'd be interacting with another group of people that were at the show that would know me and be able to play games with me and, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And that is probably one of the biggest reasons to volunteer, other than just, you know, like the superhero feeling that happens, is that you just really make some really cool friends and have some really neat experiences that others are having too, but mm-hmm. you become this tight-knit family and then you get to be the superheroes and help solve problems and make people happy for the show too.
Yeah, I've definitely made a ton of really cool friends from volunteering at cons, going and meeting other people who are just so into the same subjects as me. But for specifically, like, you know, some of these folks who are watching maybe have thought about volunteering, maybe never thought about volunteering. Like, what are they actually signing up for in your experience? Tell us a little bit about it.
12-hour days, backbreaking labor. You're moving heavy rocks, mm-hmm. lots of acid and lava. It's it's pretty awful. No, no. it really depends, like, on the show, because at PAX, let's say you volunteer for PAX, the skill sets and the capabilities where you might fit in could be anything from doing helping out with stage stuff, helping like even like loading out instruments and putting down gaff tape or picking up gaff tape off of stage, to something my father likes to do is just to be there as one of the people at the front of the stage during, you know, the musical performances. Mm-hmm.
I think I lost your audio there, Dickie. Uh-oh. I think we lost Dickie. We'll be he'll be reconnecting here shortly, hopefully. In the meantime, we got one moment. I could talk a little bit about my experience at cons while Dickie's reconnecting. There we go. You are back.
Weird. Like, your audio cut out, my audio cut out. Anyway, so I was saying that the skill set, so if you have a skill set that is like networking, computer support, then you might be helping out really way back behind the scenes, making sure everybody's having a great network experience. If your experience is things like people interactions, then you might end up doing like the line entertainment. That's a job that people do. Anything that you can think of where there might be a small little gap that you might be able to fill that piece. Almost anyone could be a volunteer and do it well.
So, you know, when I volunteered in the area where we are chatting with we're paying attention to special guests. So my experience was hanging out with the special guests, making sure they have food and water, managing lines. And that's just because of my background. And where do you typically end up? You've been talking a little bit about stage, and I mean, I know where you end up, but.
Well, when I first started with PAX, I was doing the board game, helping people check out board games and the free play board game area. That was back in the mid. I remember somebody walking into the green room while we were on a little break and asking who can read music. And then that brought me to the stage. And then from the stage, it just continued to be an ongoing thing, because I've got a background in audio and visual stuff that I do for various folks. And so my interaction is typically backstage, helping navigate those waters, making sure that people are taken care of in the same way that you're doing with the VIP folks. Mm-hmm. Except I'm just there, making sure that things run smoothly. It's a completely different perspective, because you see the multis, like I'm looking at right now, I get to see the multi-screen. I see Rich over there in the corner. Mm-hmm. He's not on the screen that everybody else sees. Yeah, hello. So it's very a very interesting piece. That said, at a con, I would be willing to work any position. If that meant that I had to carry a broom around and sweep up random pamphlets that were on the ground, I would do that, because that would be me helping the con be successful, taking a stress level off of some other individual, and then that gives me, when there's a break time, then I'm going to interact with other people. I still have the opportunity to kind of point them in the right people in the right direction, that sort of thing. So that's kind of where I typically end up, but that's because of the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so I have two more questions. One,
two more questions.
One, what do you think is something that, a benefit to volunteering that volunteers don't normally think of, right? The first thing you think of course, is like a free pass, sure. or getting in a little bit early, right? You mm-hmm. I've done that at Emerald City Comic Con at different places. I was able to get in early, check out the floor because it fills up so quickly. And they're like, volunteers, you guys get first pass today. Go check things out before your shift. Sure. So, those are kind of the obvious benefits. What's something that stands out to you as a less obvious, more interesting, maybe, benefit?
I think that probably the most interesting benefit is not something that would be physical that you could actually touch. It's more about that at the end of the show, when everything is done and you see the smiles on people's faces as they're leaving and they've gathered up their stuff, and they may look exhausted, but they had a great time and you were part of that piece. It's very fulfilling. Mm-hmm. And you really want to participate in that. The second benefit probably is that you might end up making friends with people that you didn't expect. You and I are friends because of PAX. Alpha Stream, who's in the chat right now, I wouldn't have met Teos if it wasn't for PAX. And those friendships have then contributed to things that I wouldn't have expected. The last one I'll add, and I'll just take as a half one, you might learn a skill or be inspired to do something. I have been a board game designer since I was a little kid, but was never really inspired to think that I could actually make something that would be a game. Mm-hmm. Now I have several that are kind of in the works and one that's hopefully going to be published in the next year or so, because I came away from the first PAX going, wow, those were some really neat board games. I'm going to come up with something that I can actually produce.
Yeah.
And make that happen. So that's probably the last one. The skills you gain are pretty incredible.
And I'll be honest, like, I've both put my volunteer experience on resumes as well as seen resumes and hired people based on, volunteer experience. Yes. Cause I know what it's like being a volunteer, yeah. Being back there, how much work it is and how dedicated you have to be. You know, that's something like if your employer realizes what's all involved with that, that they'll see that and they'll go, okay, well, this is some dedication.
So, yeah. If you're the type of person that would walk down the street and saw a piece of trash and you would pick it up and put it in the trash can rather than walk by it, mm-hmm. then you probably should be volunteering for cons.
All right. And then my last question for you is if people are interested in volunteering, how best do you think it would be for them to go about finding volunteer opportunities?
That's super interesting. I know for PAX, typically what happens is that we as the enforcers are told, like, hey, we're looking for more people. And then we reach out to others. And that's typically the best way. I would say the other way is that if you're at a con, at a situation, you see the opportunity to help someone, mm-hmm. do that. And watch what happens when people start recognizing that you're doing that sort of thing. That's kind of what happened at MineCon. I was helping people, like, here, let me take care of this thing. Let me move this box. And the next thing you know, hey, do you want to, like, help do this? You can usually find if they're looking for volunteers on people's Twitter pages. I've done some virtual cons, like demoing board games for companies by just following them on Twitter. That would be another way that, the social media aspect of being Discords and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well, Dickie, thank you so much for talking to us about cons. Make sure to go check out his fantastic photography at DickieAdams.com. Follow him on Twitter at DickieAdams. And is there anywhere else folks can hunt you down?
Not yet. Someday soon, those games out.
Well, I'm looking forward to being able to throw the Scoop logo on the screen when we get the Scoop. Go, boom, fine, Dickie Adams here. Yeah, are you going to stick around for the building or are you going to run off? Okay, cool.
No, I'll stick around for a little bit. I'm good.
Perfect. Then in that case, let's jump over to our next portion of the show, which should be all three of us. Here we are. Yes. All right. So we have moved to the section of the show in which we write an adventure with the help of our audience. And that is you, audience. So audience, are you guys ready?
Oh my goodness, I'm so excited. I've got a pitch. This came to me. We often write quite a bit of, D&D magic and mayhem. I am suddenly stuck with the idea that I kind of want a convention adventure. since we have a professional, we could use, like, using a convention as a starting point or whatever. I mean, we get to I mean, incredible TV episodes for sure. I'm trying to remember my favorites. It was Buffy episode.
I think there was a...
There's a Dresden, like SplatterCon. I mean, cons are just this cool place where chaos can happen, magic can happen, and we can move on from there.
All right. So our setting, friends, is a con.
Oh.
That is our setting for this adventure. So, yeah. All right. So our setting is a con. I like starting people at Chef Alberti. Where is Chef Alberti sending folks today? They're sending them to a con. Why are they going to this con?
Right. It's got to be an event. You know, conventions full of events, panels, fun things, or a demo maybe. Maybe there is something that Chef Alberti needs people to go and research. Go here, judge this, learn for yourself, and, you know, bring it back to me. Okay. Cosplay should be in there somewhere, darn right.
Yeah, there needs to be cosplay.
I got to tell you, I love it whenever the players have to design a costume or an outfit for themselves as part of the game. I think that's a ton of fun.
Yeah. All right, so the players... Players have to design their cosplay. I have an technical issues, Dickie.
Yeah, like my audio cut out, but I'm back. I'm still
okay. Great.
I'm not watching like pieces at once. We're good.
All right. Cool. So players don't have to. No, they don't have to. They get to design their cosplay outfits.
I made us some space if you want to scroll.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. All right, so here we go. Where Chef Alberti is sending the adventurers, sending adventurers from the Exploration Society to a con, and while they're they've gone to this con, and they're going to have to infiltrate the con and go cosplaying something. So, what is this con for? What kind of con are we sending these adventurers to? Is this fantasy? Is it sci-fi? Is this, are we steampunk again? Are we cyberpunk? Where are we going?
Ooh. Should it be like a cooking expo?
Oh, you know, cooking expo.
Lots of pots and pans and technology and oh, check out this. Like here's this, I'm going to steal this from Keith because here's the breakdown spatula. You know, Spatula City does carry this. It's limited edition. It all fits in a tiny little case, and you put it together, and it makes a wand of flipping. Better
than anything else. Oh, that's perfect.
Oh man, let's see. There's I love that. Also, Adventures Pack in the chat has mentioned part of the map should be the empty halls.
That is a real thing.
The behind the stage hallways, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, the sign to say you don't belong here. Do not go past this sign.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh man. Anyway, I've spent a lot of time in those hallways. Yeah. Both when I was supposed to be there and when I wasn't supposed to be there, but that's okay.
You know what you need though. You there has to be a clipboard.
Oh yeah.
A clipboard somewhere and a either like a safety vest or something that makes you look more official, right?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Wristband. Maybe they can come up with something that looks like a wristband to get behind that area, right?
Oh, that's very good. That's like a great initial goal, right?
Right. And
once they've got it, boom, now we're in those back hallways.
Get access to the show. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The convention catacombs.
Chef Alberti wasn't invited this year.
Oh dear!
To the food and tool con, the kitchen con,
Oh, I have this idea. Cutlery con.
I like that. He couldn't go. He wasn't invited to kitchen con because he was a speaker. A speaker at CutleryCon.
Oh, and they're the same weekend? Is that what you're saying? Or is it like a rivalry?
It's a rivalry.
Okay.
So Chef needs you, the PCs, to infiltrate the con.
Okay.
And steal back his favorite ladle.
Gosh, I love this because in my head I'm getting this like fantasy version of the World's Fair, but it's all for kitchen, right? But there's that sense of like wonder and new technology around every corner. Yeah. And then somebody
else is using it, right? That spatula. That spatula, the ladle, mm-hmm. the spatula or ladle. Somebody else is using it not knowing it was his, right?
They
just pulled it out of a drawer or somebody brought it to them. And they've just been using it, but it's got to be somebody big and nasty. Like, that's the...
Right.
They don't mean to be big and nasty, but when you go in there, you know, like, you go into a kitchen and you're not supposed to be there, and they're like, out, out, out!
Yeah. let's see here. So, is it Alton Brown?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, what would be the alternative? No. It's not Alton Brown. It's Gordon Ramsay.
Okay. Oh yeah. Oh, right.
It's Hell's Kitchen, right?
Yeah. So
there we go.
How is Rando Gamzee?
There you go. And we need somebody in the chat to come up with a better name than Hell's Kitchen, because that would be get us into terrible legal trouble.
From the hit show traveling show, Sticks.
Sticks. They make jerky bits.
Oh, Sticks bits. Perfect. And they make jerky and a stew because they need a ladle.
I just took the time to go back to our Axbeak egg adventure where we actually introduced Chef Rorsden Gamzee.
There we go.
Oh, there you go.
Rorsden Gamzee is back.
What a villain.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we didn't take care of him there. So no. I like Hex Cucina.
That's very good.
That one. I think I'm gonna go with that. That's funny. I like that.
Oh my gosh.
All right. And so your mission is to retrieve it from Rorsden Gamzee.
Right.
I think Rorsden Gamzee knows, right? Because Rorsden Gamzee and Chef Albiardi are longtime competitors
rivals
now.
Oh, yeah. Fair.
You're missing. Your mission is to infiltrate the con.
And right, this is the one time when he won't have all his tools back next to him, right? Because he's on stage.
Right.
Yep. And I would like to just throw a little put this in the lore that his goons are Belks.
His goons are Belks. Done.
B-E-L-K-S.
B-E-L-K-S. Perfect.
Taylor, you understand.
Yeah. You should fear Rorsden's ground beef golems.
Oh, yes.
Mm. Oh, my gosh.
It's a snack. It's like a Lunchable.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and put that in here so that we can keep that in here. Fear Rorsden ground beef golems.
They are small but mini.
Very good.
I love it.
Dipping sticks. Yeah, very nice.
And I feel like that needs to be an encounter too, right? So let's put one encounter here. So scene one. Let's do this the way we like to do this. Scene one. For scene one, we meet with Chef, and Chef lets the crew know that they need to design their costumes.
Right. We're going to get into the convention with some good old cooking cosplay. Allow us to sneak through while we get the devices we'll need, the wristbands, whatever is going to get us into the hallways, the back halls.
Yeah.
What's your puzzle for picking the right color of ribbon to make the wristband?
That's a good one.
You've got the right day. Right?
Yeah.
It's a different wristband each day. So how are you going to work that out?
Yeah. Right? So scene two. They show up at the con, and now they have to figure out how to sneak in.
Right. cool time to do some of those little cooking demos or add some strange technologies. I mean, we did our festival, which had some similar bits, but I love it when people get to explore random strange things.
Yeah.
So investigation wristbands, right? So the PCs need to figure out either how to get a wristband,
or if they pay for one from a scalper.
Yeah, how to get a wristband. how to forge a wristband.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Will they have the correct UV technology?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and then that opens up opportunities. Is that you know, now they have various ways to enter the convention. Like, they're outside. Are they going to go mug another chef who's going into this convention? Are they going to, you know, how are they going to interact with all the help? Right? Because
if they go around the back, there's people bringing in groceries. They've got wristbands on.
Yeah.
They're obviously overwhelmed. So here's our volunteer moment, right?
Exactly.
Like that's one way you get in. You could just go right up to the will call and say you're Alton Brown and you're here for
sure. I kind of like this idea that you were just mentioning, like, you know, public service should be rewarded. If you want to work at a convention, start working at one, you know. Yeah. Here are a list of tasks that they will offer you in the morning.
Oh, and,
you
know, that's good. Yeah.
Do some of this and you can be in, no problem. We'll take you the rest of the day.
A nice little adventure piece, right?
Exactly. If they go to the volunteer booth, the coordinator, the person... because I don't want to try to spell that. The person, Ricky Dadams, give them some tasks that will give them greater access to the convention and allies to help them
with
their tasks. Oh, not convection. Convention.
Well, I don't know. The lava, right? Greater
convection. All right. So yeah, no, I like where this is going. I'm loving it so far. Let's see here. So scene three. They are in the con. Actually, you know what might be kind of fun? Let's go ahead and let's do this. Let's come up with some of those volunteer tasks.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely.
What are some of the things that they could volunteer to do? Carry groceries.
Yeah, move the supplies. Line entertainment. That could be a persuasion charisma role. A bard could be like a play an instrument, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, line entertainment.
Security.
Security. Helping the speakers get to their panels.
Well, see, that would be an interesting one. Maybe our anti-hero is the keynote.
Oh.
And they get assigned to that role, right?
Yeah.
So to get that role, you'd have to do a couple other things beforehand, right? You have to demonstrate that, like, all right, you know what? You volunteered for like 4 out of the 5 available things. We really like for you to do, like, help us with this. You seem trustworthy.
Yeah.
We're going to let you like interact with this. Big disclaimer here, folks. We do not do this in real life as enforcers. We don't go and take their ladles. Approved for cons at all.
No, no.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. You know what? I want to kind of go back on this. I don't like, I kind of want to get rid of all this investigation. And I want to say, Chef Erbaugh, the chef says volunteer. Tells you to volunteer.
Maybe he gives you like a letter of introduction, you know.
With a letter. Wrong button. Yeah.
I like that.
Because then the investigation can be the task that they have to do, right?
Yeah.
Here's the box. They all got disorganized together. They're all in what do you call it, where the trucks drop off all the stuff. Everything got mixed up. I need to just get these boxes to the right booths.
Yep.
Take them and deliver them right.
Yeah. Ooh. I like this.
This is interesting. I like this because now we're making them see Roarsden Gamsby, right, at the start. So maybe maybe part of this is you volunteer, and then when you go in later, well, now you have to be in costume. Maybe cosplay is not the start, but it's like part of stealthing in.
Yeah,
your disguise.
You see how to get to, yes, and so then you're like, okay, well, now I wear this cosplay of looking like a belt.
Right. We've seen the Lunchable Golem, so maybe we haven't. I don't know.
Yeah, so and then scene three will be the volunteer tasks, actually doing them.
I like what little Hug Buddy said. Can we defeat these golems, you know, by eating them?
Yes. So it's
pretty great. Yeah.
So scene four.
Special rules for monster consumption.
Exactly. Scene four. The PCs have found their way to Roarsden's green room. And it's guarded. I gotta do a rainbow puke. It's guarded by a small army of what did we call them?
The golems?
Yeah. Ground beef golems.
Ground beef golems. Who brought up that idea?
Oops, you got it.
That was
Yeah, yes.
All right. So guarded by a legion of ground beef.
Ground beef
golems.
Golems.
And so they act as a swarm, or several swarms. They act as a couple of swarms. And you can spend an action to stab one with a fork and eat some of the golems. This does like great. I don't know, 2d6 damage or whatever. We'll figure it out. We stat things.
If you dip them in the sauce first, it's easier to they get.
Oh yeah,
it's like a thin pan plan, right? If you dip it and then eat it, you eat them faster.
I like that.
Oh, cover them in sauce.
Cover them in sauce.
And get a bonus.
Right, get a bonus. Bonus for eating.
This is really good. I love it when you can use the environment, so that's great.
Barbecued your attacks. Do 1d6 extra spice damage.
Spicy.
I don't know. What else would we put on these beef golems? We'll go with steak sauce, right? Steak sauce.
Oh, fair.
You'll
it's like cool ranch. I don't know.
Yeah,
cheese, a nice cheese glaze.
Cheese would be good.
You gain 1d4 temp hit points. Right.
Oh, very good. Yeah, absolutely. Of course.
Yeah.
The glaze. Let's see. What
happens when you eat the vegan ones? They've got to have vegan ones, right?
Well, they do. Yeah, some of these have to be vegan, you know.
Yeah, so what happens when you eat a vegan one?
Yeah,
it probably tastes terrible, but it's got to give you a better perk, right?
I mean,
as the representative vegan on the chat.
Vegan in the chat.
You
said you wanted a healthier option.
Yeah, for the healthier option. Yeah.
Brown potato, yeah.
Healthier option, tofu terrors.
Oh,
are one of the swarms.
I like that.
There we go.
Sweet potatoes. My goodness, that is great. God. I feel like Roarsden Gamsby would have figured it out. You know, made sure it's tasty.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. This is cool.
Let's see. So, scene five. Because we never actually fight Roarsden Gamsby, scene five will be escape from the con.
Okay, right, and I don't fight escape.
Yeah,
I feel escape. Like you know, maybe at the top of scene five, you know, maybe Gamsby figures it out, and like you're starting to walk away, and you hear the shouts of alarm, like my ladle, my famous ladle,
the ladle,
and
donkey.
He begins to chase you, calling you a not a donkey, what would a mule.
Yeah.
and you have to escape because Gamsby is too powerful for you.
Can you, could you use, instead of escape, could you, well, I guess it's still escape, but rather than just running, mm-hmm. and I'm getting everybody chase, could you talk your way out of it?
So I think so, right? So you can use access to the friends you made along the way.
Oh.
Yes, yes. We have a reputation mechanic. Did you do those volunteer tasks well?
This is the wrong ladle. Hold on, I'll get you somebody to bring you the right one from.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good.
Yeah,
So we, so many options.
Try to social your way out.
Yep.
As well, convincing the goons that there's a different ladle. However, the players decide to define that. But I also like using your the access to the friends you made along the way to help give you some space and redirect the
everybody move, right?
Mm-hmm. Everybody move. Oh man.
Yeah, because I feel like no one probably likes Roars and Gamby. I think that's kind of the moral of these continued adventures. So maybe the volunteer coordinator is going to give us an out or something, you know. Mm-hmm. We'll stall him a little bit, you know. We're not going to open the door for you, but we'll help a little.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and we can come up with some other options for this as well. Let's see. What is another way they can kind of, it's not escape from the con. That's not right. We're escaping from Gamsby.
Right.
Gamsby.
The Gamsbino.
Yeah, someone will try to intimidate. What happens when somebody tries to intimidate?
That's a good question. I mean, who are you intimidating? I guess that's the question. Do you intimidate the crowds to provoke like a mass exodus from the con? Is our con ending at this moment? Because that would be an easy way to get out.
Yeah. You could try to intimidate the goons. You could crowd. I think the other volunteers are your companions in this, and they're there to help you. So I don't think you want to invite the volunteers.
You can do that multi-door thing. Take this back to the cosplay. You do the multi-door. You go in this door. They come out the door with the costume. You go in another door. The whole like running through doors and appearing in different places. We do that Hanna-Barbera motif.
Yes, absolutely.
Doors, right? We provide the Benny Hill soundtrack and
exactly. Oh man. Oh, this is fun.
And then if you have four successes before you have two failures or three failures, then congratulations, you've navigated this hallway.
Did you just make a secret skill challenge?
I would never do that. Oh man, this
amazing.
This seems like okay, so it's a whole convention farce. It's a whole adventure path. I love that. So the thing I like about this adventure that we've just outlined here, and I think this is the entire adventure already, is that there is some opportunities for some very light combat.
Yeah.
There is some opportunities for some really good deep role play. And there's some really fun ways to show some of these things with different skill challenges and use of skills. And the last thing I do want to say about this is that although we were talking in D&D terms, this is a very agnostic kind of adventure where we could easily slap just into Shadowrun or World of Darkness or
Dark Sun.
Oh man, Dark Sun, that would be great. Right? We could put it anywhere. So this is a ton of fun. I do have one quick announcement that I want to go ahead and let the explorers know, is that the new Pantheon Academia today is going to be canceled, unfortunately. Some people are recouping and recovering, and we wish them the best on that. And hopefully they'll be back next week. So, oh man. Yeah. All right. So I think that's right about time for this segment.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Dickie, for hanging out with us and making this adventure. And everybody pay attention to the streams. And when Dickie's games start rolling out, we'll let you know. As well as when we see volunteer opportunities for you folks. If you guys want to go volunteer at cons, we'll let you guys know. Like, oh, by the way, you know, so-and-so con is looking for volunteers. So thank you again. And let's do our little wrap up, Rich.
Thank you.
And, all right. Oh man, that was a great show.
That was awesome. That was,
I
want to
make
fun.
Sure and thank our guests, Dickie, the amazing Dickie Adams, and the fantastic Keith Baker.
Mm-hmm. Two incredible heroes. I'm glad they were both able to join us. Such a good series of discussions.
Yeah. Oh man. And you know, just a little preview on next week. Next week we are going to have two special guests once again. The first guest is going to be amazing game designer Tracy Barnett. They are an indie game designer, and I think they have an indie game that they got over to us for us to check out a little bit. So that's going to be a ton of fun. Additionally, we're going to have Dr. Jessica Hebert, PhD, an amazing scientist who is going to sit down and chat with me on ways that we can be safe in this upcoming convention season, in this upcoming like world post pandemic where we're all getting vaccinated, and kind of help us get back to the table. And I'm very excited about that discussion as well.
Start the nerd times up again.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited about all these things. Mm-hmm. Dr. Jessica Hebert is also part of the amazing nerd group, the PDX Broadsides. So that will be a ton of fun. All right, Rich, where can our friends,
can
people see you and hang out with you in these next week?
Well,
anything they can look for?
For me, definitely check out my Twitter at @rmalina. I don't think I have any projects releasing right now, which is nice. But my Academy of Adventures Kickstarter will be launching on May 3rd. So we'll keep talking about that as we get closer. I just also need to point out that, of course, it came. I don't know if you've noticed this whole time.
Yes.
You too can get your own Saving Throw t-shirt. It's very comfy. The blue heather. Ask Dom. Dom will send you the links.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally check the links in the chat. As far as the Exploration Society goes, make sure to check us out and pop over to the Patreon, follow us there, sign up and join our Discord. You come and chat with us. Tell us what you think about these segments. Tell us folks who you are looking forward to seeing, people we can reach out to, you know, anything really that will help make the show better for you. We want to hear it. So hop into Discord and let us know. And then you can find me throughout the week. I'll be DJing over on my stream at DJ Pirate Rabbits. And if you like house music, come hang out there. Otherwise, I'll be back here next Sunday for more Owlbear Soup.
So. Absolutely. I can't wait. It's going to be a good episode.
All right. Thank you, everyone, so much for coming and hanging out with us. And we will see you all next week.